This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Juan McCartney is sponsored by J.S. Johnson, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, L.A. Impact, Windows and Doors, and Wendy's.
Welcome to The Revolution with Juan McCartney. This is Lester Alcock sitting in for the great Juan McCartney. And welcome to the show. Folks, you know, it's not easy sitting on a show called The Revolution. Wow. The Revolution, what word? The Revolution. Folks, I am thinking this morning that our democracy is really broken. And I want you to think about that with me for a moment. I believe that our democracy is fundamentally broken, and we've got to find a way to fix it. We've been under these, as far as I'm concerned, we've been under these illegal emergency powers now for almost two long years. And I'm thinking, how is that possible where we have three co-equal branches of government, one led by the Speaker of the House, the other one led by the Chief Justice, and the other one led by the Prime Minister, and we have not had one moment before the courts where some competent court told us that it's okay to extend emergency powers indefinitely. Not once. And we've got so many men and women in this country with QC behind their name. It's to me, it's an embarrassment. We have lecturers at, you know, at UB and University of the West Indies, and we've not had moments where we sat down and figured out this question: can you extend emergency powers indefinitely? To me, it's just personally annoying. And it's annoying so much so that when you look at every single objective global measure, every single one, the Bahamas is at the bottom or near the bottom. That means in every aspect of COVID-19 performance, the Bahamas is underperforming. The Bahamas is among the worst in the world. And those of you who don't believe it, just Google COVID-19 global indexes. And these are objective scientists measuring these things. For the first time in the history of the world, the very first time, every government, every leader, every institution and national economies have the exact same homework: fix COVID. I mean, just think about that for a moment. Every leader, every civil service, every civil servant, every national institution like UB, every single one of them have the exact same homework. And what's interesting about it is that we have people who measuring it, who in your party, not in your opposition, and not in your clique. So there's nothing you can say when your name is at the bottom of the list, apart from the fact that we are underperforming and we've got to figure out why. Does anyone in the Bahamas still believe that Menace and his team can fix this problem? I'm waiting. Does anyone in the Bahamas still believe that? What COVID-19 is showing not just us, but the whole world, is that you cannot elect competence. You've got to build competence into your systems. And if you don't do that, you're just going to struggle. You can't solve global problems with your boys and your friends and your party. Think about that. Does anyone still believe that you can say you're following the science if nobody's auditing the science that you're following? Just think about that for a moment. These are just simple questions that I want us to think about today, that I want us to begin to start to explore, because as we know, pandemics, what they do to every country, pandemics can actually take your country to the brink of state failure. It has done that. Pandemics, civil wars, world wars, and state failure take countries to the brink of failure. And we've got to start to think about that. We've got a trust deficit. It's just sad. Just looking at the Bahamas numbers, it's just really sad. Imagine if we had the whole country engaged in dealing with this problem. And not just our boys and our friends and who we know. Can you solve national problems with your boys, your friends, and who you know? If you're injured, do you just call your boy? Or do you look for the best surgeon to help you? And we've got to start to explore that question. So today, we're going to have a wide-ranging conversation. And the idea is not for you to agree with me. And there are loads of people in this Bahamas who are vaccinated, who are angry with the unvaccinated. Well, get over it. Because at the end of the day, this is a democracy. And while I have my views on how things should be done, you've got to also respect the democracy. Just as I respect leadership, the people elect a leadership team, you've got to respect that this is a democracy. And everybody wants to try to get back to normal. Yeah, of course. But what's normal in this COVID-19 environment? They once told us that, yeah, if you got vaccinated, you're okay. But we know that if you get vaccinated, you still can catch and spread COVID. Fauci the other day said, he told all of us, that, look, man, even though you're vaccinated, we want you to wear masks. And that's the right thing. I don't want to catch COVID. I'm fully vaccinated. I'm not going to be around anybody who I think have COVID. And I don't want to catch COVID from you. But I'm not going to tell the unvaccinated that they're stupid. But you're not going to be in my presence, but I'm not going to tell you you're stupid. What we should be thinking about is, how do we engage our democracy? How do we set up systems so that people can trust what we say, so that they can believe in us? And we can't do that with just our boys and our friends. And so let's talk and think about that. I'm also of the view, folks, that we also need an election. I think we need a new mandate, because nobody is signed up for what's going on now. Nobody. Nobody signed up for one-man rule. We need a new mandate. And whatever the people say, that's what it is, a new mandate. Whoever gets that mandate, we need a new mandate. So those are the two things I want to think about today. I want to think about this idea about how we manage COVID, and can we do it better? And can we actually get this thing under control? And do we need a new mandate? I want you to just think about that with me this morning. You know, you guys know how I start the show. All right. And hey, Arlington, you got a drum roll? I got one of my favorite people in CEO this morning. I call him the CEO of CEOs. You know, this is the man who, in America, when people looking at CEOs, they just go to the stock exchange and check the numbers, how much money you make, how much the stock went up, what's the value of the company. That's just how they do it. Remember when I was interviewing the head of RCL, and the dude just told me, look, man, when I took over, the stock price was here. It's now here. That's just demonstrated leadership adding value. This man, folks, this is one of the most successful CEOs in the history of our country. And it's just driven by mathematics. And he also shared with me a concept that is stuck in my head to this very day. He told me about wicked problems. Folks, see, COVID is a wicked problem. I want you to just think about that. COVID is a, see, wicked problems are problems that are just that are not easily solved. See, when you fix one part of it, like when you have these silly lockdowns, that starts to destroy the economy. When you do certain things, other things happen. Those are wicked problems that they are not easily solved by simple thinkers. And this is why when your country faces a crisis that can take it down, you just can't have your boys doing it. you've got to have the best minds out there. And you've got to be mature enough to not try to be the smartest person in the room. Because look here, with a country like the Bahamas that can produce the Shawnee Millers and the Stevie Gardners and the Michael Thompson and all these great professional players, you will never be the smartest person in this Bahamas because there are too many great Baymans. And so you've got to humble yourself and take notes sometimes. Because folks, based on what I'm seeing on the internet and some of the WhatsApp groups I'm in, there are some Bahamians who know, who've got a good feel for what to do in this crisis. Problem is, we're not talking to them because we can only talk to our friends and the people who we know. And I think we've got to grow up. Think about it. Folks, I give you the CEO of CEOs, my good friend, Leron Williams. Leron, man. Okay, man, you're supposed to bring the drum roll in before the tour. Come on. Leon, welcome to the show, man.
Bro, it's so good to be here. Les, has been more than a year since we've been in this room together.
Boy,
on a Monday. We used to do digital Mondays.
I'm telling you. You know.
But notwithstanding, you've been in my head, Lester. Notice for the first time in history, Lester, right. Every government on the planet has been set the same homework assignment at the same time.
Right.
It started December 1st, probably 2019. Mm-hmm. That was a great opportunity, but many of them haven't learned. And as a result of that, we end up in this situation where we've got this wicked problem. So you started with the wicked problem, so let's explain to our listeners what
That was a wicked problem.
In planning and policy, a wicked problem is a problem that is difficult or impossible to solve because of incomplete, contradictory, and changing requirements that are more difficult to recognize. So let's take it. You got a car. The tire is flat.
Right.
That's a linear problem. Mm. You got one or two choices. Drive on the flat tire to the gas station, put some air in it, change the flat, or put some one of them tubes and put some into the tire until you go. Now you got these new vehicles, the BMWs and Mercedes-Benz, that could go 50 miles on a flat tire. Right, I mean, but those tires cost $400 or $500 on the road. In fact, those vehicles, like the BMWs, don't even have a spare in them.
What? No. I guess that's why they call them the ultimate driving machine.
The ultimate driving machine. And so a wicked problem, and as you describe it, COVID-19, like crime and number of other problems, are just simple wicked problems.
Yeah.
They're not linear problems. So you need asymmetrical leaders to solve a wicked problem. I was in Trinidad back in 2012, I believe it was, doing some consulting work for TSTT, the Trinidad Telephone Company. Didn't have a job. And when I was there, I got into the airport. And the taxi was taking me down to the Hyatt Hotel. And I'm saying to him, I said, there's no traffic on the streets. I had come in on the late evening American Airlines flight. He says, man, there's a curfew in place. Curfew! And so Trinidad had a crime problem. They imposed a curfew. And the crime
gone
down to the bottom.
And so did the economy.
No problem. Now come Christmas, you've got a problem. The economy is in the gutter, in the toilet, right? And you got carnival coming up. So what they did, they had to lift the curfew. And so once you put the curfew in, the lockdowns in, these countries has put the lockdown in, the next thing that happens is the economy tanks.
Right.
Okay? In the case of the Bahamas, we had 17,000 hotel workers alone out of jobs. So the employment went up 50%+, okay? Now that the economy tanks, you decide, okay, so I got to go borrow some money because I need stimulus.
Right.
We're not the United States. The United States could print money. $3.1 trillion in PPEs, you understand?
Can you imagine?
So we went ahead and we started borrowing money. We take our deficit up to $9.5 billion. The interest on that is $483 million a year.
So that's going to be the largest ministry in the government.
On our debt. And so we've taken the debt-to-GDP ratio beyond what has ever been in history. And so now you've got a situation where we didn't borrow enough money the first time. You go borrow money now, the interest rate goes up.
Different.
So when you could have borrowed money back in 2019 at, say, 8% interest, you're going to pay 10-15% 2 years later.
But you also have an economy, though, that may not be able to sustain that debt as well.
That's my problem. And so when you look at what the World Bank has said, the World Bank has simply said, And notwithstanding what I saw somebody said in the Guardian, the Tribune, that we're going to recover in 2003, the IMF and the World Bank says 2024.
Who said that?
I think it was a former DPM or something.
Yeah, I remember saying
2024.
Well, I mean, they were wrong about every single thing. First of all, you remember in 2020 they said that we were going to recover by August,
right?
And then So
this wicked problem goes on. So now you want to go borrow money. So the question is, who do you borrow money from? Who, the IMF? The IMF is going to tell you, listen, 50% of your civil servants got to go.
Can you imagine?
You got to implement income tax. You borrow from the Chinese.
They want your port. they want your
infrastructure. Yeah. So you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You're between two rocks and two hard places. And so in solving a wicked problem is you have to decide how far you're going to go, whether you've got the resources financially as well as the intellect to be able to solve the problem. And you just have to, what they refer to as settle. You have to just settle. This is now. We've had smallpox with us as a pandemic. We got rid of smallpox through vaccinations. I'm a Rotarian. We're in my pen. Okay? We've been fighting polio. Our last stand is in Africa, trying to get Africa. I had the IPPB of Africa on talking to COVID about COVID earlier this year. We were like four cases away. We're trying to get Africa down to zero. Smallpox has bankers. No organization, no country could outrun its leader. And this is, I ain't being political. A crisis creates opportunities. Barack Obama says, listen, my friend, says when a pandemic comes, when a crisis comes, it pulls back the curtain on all the problems that we were kicking down the road. And all of a sudden, they all come to face us. Not one, they all come to face us.
Open the curtain.
So you open the curtain. So the pandemic opened the curtain on our health system. Princess Margaret, been there 100 years in the condition. Rather than go fix the hospital and build the hospital, we decide we're going to spend $20 million on sidewalks. I'm not being political.
You understand what I'm saying? You're talking
and
about
so
choices.
Pretend, I'm talking about the choices that leaders make. And so as a result of that, I often say, leadership is having a compelling vision, a comprehensive plan, relentless implementation, and talented people working together. So I went to Kanto, got elected as president, as chairman of the board of directors of Kanto. Kanto had 70 telephone companies. 70 telephone companies as members. I became the president in 2006 in Trinidad. Had my board of directors. What was amazing to me was that I followed, the chairman before me was Cornelius Pryor. Cornelius Pryor is the owner, let me say it again, the owner of ATN. He owns a guy in a telephone company. He owns an internet services company in Haiti. He owned an internet services and the mobile company in the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Right.
He owns Bermuda and ATN in the United States. This is the man I replaced. He had a plane, a jet plane, corporate plane. He used to go around and pick up the directors, we need one to have his quarterly board meetings. Fellas tell me, you're from the Bahamas, son. I was only CEO of BTC at the time. He says, if you want to be chairman of Kanto, you got to own a plane.
What?
In 2 years, I took the membership of Kanto from 72 members to 133 members in 33 countries on four planets. On four continents. From 72 to 133, no one since me has beaten that number.
Wow.
Leadership is having a vision. But the vision got to have four characteristics. You got to have content, you got to have context, you got to have credibility and collaboration. I don't hear leaders telling me what their vision is for the Bahamas. We've had Penland, And then after Pendleton, we had Ingram. And then after Ingram, we had Christie. And all we have had is managers.
Talking about the economy.
Who caught the ball and didn't even build on what Pendleton did.
Right.
We can't even maintain buildings. Look at the Clarence A. Bain building. Look at the General Post Office. We can't even keep buildings. You go to Europe and you see buildings that have been around for 500 years. We, in our 50th anniversary, coming up in 2 years, have destroyed buildings that we built 40 years ago.
So we've got to we've got to step up our game. All right, we're going to continue that. We're going to continue that dialogue. You know, that's a part of the show, man, because. You know, Hurricane Sandy, I don't know if you remember that hurricane.
Of course.
That was the hurricane that saved Barack Obama's presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes when crises come up, you know, it just like, it shows your leadership level, whether it's good or bad. And that's just...
But a leader should never complain. I hear leaders talk about this, you know.
You got to be able to,
you know, the Bahamas government came into a bad time.
Oh,
we ended up with Hurricane Dorian. And after Hurricane Dorian, we end up with COVID-19. Man, crisis birth leaders.
That's right.
I was sent to BTC in 2007, 2014. 70,000 calls was failing on mobile network per day in Nassau, on 9-8, 70,000. It was a complete failure of the network. And IRCA was wanted to fine BTC $35.3 million. I was sent there to fix it. Mm-hmm. I never got in the newspaper and talked about what Jeff Houston, former CEO, didn't do and what he didn't do, you know, what he should have done.
I was sent there to
fix the problem.
You need to go fix BTC again.
And so a leader has the vision and the conviction that a dream can be achieved. He inspires the power and the energy to get it done.
Wow.
It's all about leadership.
Wow, BTC needs you again. All right. Hey, Alan Ellington, give me another drum roll, man. Folks, this is a special treat for you, man. Another drum roll. Anyway, let me give him a drum roll myself.
Okay. You know what your former co-host used to say?
What?
We used to sit right where you're sitting. Call it up on Siri.
I'm telling you, when I'm in the studio, man, I need drums, man. Folks. Thank you very much. Folks, we've got a special treat for you. All I can say with this man is he's just reminding us that sometimes when you, like Nelson Mandela said, sometimes it falls upon a generation to be great. And sometimes we have to know that we are the great people in that generation. You never know people great when they in your time sometimes. And sometimes you just have to remind us that we have it within ourselves to do great things. And folks, this is the man who is in my mind, he is taking this idea of the Speaker of the House of Assembly and reminding us that this is just not some government appointee. That this is an important part of our democracy. And if you don't understand what your role is as the Speaker, you can actually destroy our democracy and have our country as just one branch of government where the Speaker and the Chief Justice believe that they work for some Prime Minister, when in reality, the Speaker and the Chief Justice, they are a part of the overall checks and balances in a country like ours. And if you don't understand that, if you don't understand you have the Speaker, you have the Chief Justice, and you have the Prime Minister all sitting under the Constitution and then the Queen. When you don't understand that, you run around just doing whatever you want to do. And until somebody actually checks you, you may not realize what to do. Folks, I give you the Speaker of the House, Mr. Halston Moultrie. Brother Moultrie, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Man, it's always a pleasure to have you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you because, you know, sometimes we just need to be reminded about our general structure. And in fact, when I listen to some of the speeches in Parliament, Mr. Speaker, I don't ever hear our leaders referencing like how this nation was birthed. I when I hear American, like when I tune into the to American speakers, when they talking in their Congress, they always talking about Abraham Lincoln, and they talking about their shared history, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And I hardly ever hear in our country our leaders across the aisles talking about our shared history. And that to me is kind of sad.
Well, first of all, I think we have to, let me take you down the course of our history. In 1729, the Bahamas started its parliamentary democracy. It was the fourth.
1729. So that means people talking about this a young country, they just don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Exactly. 1729, the fourth oldest parliamentary democracy in the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, being preceded only by the United Kingdom, Barbados, and I think Canada. But what is important about that is for 24 years, we had basically no political parties. The first political party was formed in 1953. So for 224 years, the country was governed by independent representatives who would normally bring petitions to parliament on behalf of their constituents. And then a political party was formed in 1953, and another one later in 1955. And since that time, the records would show that the party agenda began to supersede the people's agenda. And cronyism, nepotism, and political patronage became the order of the day. And the Bahamas began from a surplus budget. When we got majority rule in 1967, there was a surplus budget. The incoming government met monies in the treasury.
Right.
And the process of deficit spending started around that time, to the point where nowadays we're almost up to $10 billion in deficits. Now, the thing about it is we have adopted the Westminster model of governance,
right,
which calls for the separation of powers. There are three equal heads of the government. The principal head is the legislative branch. And why do I say that? Because out of the legislative branch comes the executive branch. You cannot be a member of the executive unless you are elected to the parliament or appointed by an elected member of parliament.
Interesting, interesting.
So the Constitution establishes the legislative branch or the parliament as the branch that
as foundational to our organization.
Yes, and it is the supervisory branch of government that supervises and have oversight of the executive branch action. And the executive branch under Article 72 of the Constitution are required to report and be accountable to the parliament.
That don't happen in our country. I see that a lot in the United States, where they would have these, where they have testimonies. It's interesting. I mean, I don't see that in the Bahamas.
And the reason why you don't see it is because in the mid-80s or so, we began to develop these supersized cabinets under the administration of Sir Lyndon Oscar Pinling. And the effect of the supersized cabinet is this. When you can have a large enough cabinet so that when they walk over to the House of Assembly, they have the majority of the votes.
They don't need the parliament.
The parliament becomes a rubber stamp. For example, we have 23 members of the cabinet in a 39-seat parliament. In the House of Commons, any time the cabinet gets beyond 18% of the composition of the House of Commons, and you know they have 650 seats.
Mm-hmm.
There's an outcry for it to be reduced, the cabinet to be reduced back to the 18 or so percent. And the reason for that is the executive branch or the cabinet would have to persuade the parliament when it brings any matter to parliament. It has to persuade, it would be usually smaller than the backbench.
Right.
And smaller than the opposition. So it has to persuade the backbench, who would be a part of the majority, as well as the opposition. Well, if you remove that, there is no checks on the executive after you remove that aspect of the functioning of the parliament. Then you have another problem. Over the years, the bench has been politicized in the judiciary. So the PLP comes to power, and they appoint a number of judges who are sympathetic to their cause.
Right.
The FNM replaces them and appoint a number of judges who are sympathetic to the FNM cause. So sometimes when you go before the court, when you look up at the bench,
you got a PLP judge or FNM judge.
You're getting a PLP decision or an FNM decision. That should never happen. That level of confidence in the judiciary should never be eroded the way it has been eroded in the Bahamas today. So instead of having co-equals,
mm-hmm.
the prime minister operates as king and lord of all because he selects the chief justice
mm-hmm.
on his recommendation.
Right.
They appoint the judges. They hold the budget for the judiciary and control the budget for the parliament.
And him and his boys appoint the speaker.
Exactly. Now, the difficulty that the executive is having now is that the speaker decided to become independent.
Interesting. On that, folks, we're going to take a break. You're listening to The Revolution with Vaughn McCartney. This is Lester Alcock sitting in for him. We've got the CEOs in-house, Mr. Leon Williams. Man, thank you for being here, sir. And we've got the first independent speaker that I know in my lifetime in the house, Alton D. Moultrie. And folks, when we come back, we're going to have a special treat for you because the speaker is going to be having a special meeting. And this guest may be interested in that. Back in a moment.
Hurricane protection,
then you need to get to know LA Impact Windows and Doors. Forget the plywood and get
the lowest and affordable prices
on hurricane windows and doors for all your residential and commercial projects.
You can feel safe and secure with LA Impact Windows and Doors. Located in the Southland Shopping Center, East Street South, LA Impact Windows and Doors, impacting your views. Call 322-3667 or 829-7888.
There's only one way to have a better morning.
How?
Start your mornings the best way with our 2 for $6 breakfast sandwiches at Wendy's. For a limited time, choose any two of your favorite breakfast sandwiches, including the fresh Kraken Sack Muffin, honey buttermilk chicken biscuit, double sausage muffin, or the sausage egg and cheese biscuit. Wash it all down with our cold brew shake or coffee. Better mornings always start at Wendy's. Wendy's, different in inside and out. Excludes airport locations.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Folks, welcome back to The Revolution. This is Lester Alcock sitting in for the great Vaughn McCartney. We've got in city, we've got to speak, we've got to speak at the house, Mr. House and Dimitri. We've got Leon Williams co-hosting. You know, when the CEO co-hosting, man. The CEO of CEOs.
Oh boy, listen, it is good to be here. Shout out to my kids in Atlanta, Georgia, and shout out to all those people in the Caribbean who are listening in, Lester. You know, you got a good fan base, you know, from Digital Mondays.
Hey, but we got a shout out to Shawnee Miller and Steve Gadler.
I thought we were going to spend some time with that.
But
Mr. Speaker raised some interesting points, you know, because this appointment, what our leaders have become is copycats.
Mm.
And so in the United States, the Republicans come, they load the bench. You saw what Donald Trump did with the justice systems. Biden comes in, whether he's going to extend the number of justices or not, to put some Democrats on.
But he's got the power to do it if he wants to.
That's the point I made. You go through the Caribbean and you look at what prime ministers have traditionally done. In the case of, in the case of Belize, almost every elected person became a minister. You go down through the Caribbean and more than 30, 40, 50% of the elected leading party are ministers, made ministers. Wow. And so the question is, you know, what are we going to do? And my question to you, Mr. Speaker, and to Lester, in the case of the Olympics, you think if Japan was the kind of democracy that Western democracies are, we would have had an Olympics?
No. sometimes it's frustrating, Mr. Speaker, watching.
But it tells about the leadership, right?
Yeah. You know, it's frustrating sometimes watching Shawnee Miller and Stevie Gardner dominate the world. And then coming back home and watching people just fumbling. To me, that's just like confuses me, because if we got great people like Shawnee Miller and Stevie Gardner and all these other great babies, why isn't that democracy? Why aren't we like jamming like Singapore and Switzerland and these places? I just don't get it.
Well, you know, I as a former athlete myself, I can tell you there's a great challenge in the Bahamas to get the government to understand the benefits that can accrue to a nation
from sports
if they invest in sports and invest in our leading athletes. What is happening now in the Bahamas, we are seeing our great athletes having to go to the United States and use the institutions of the United States
to win medals for us.
To develop themselves to the point where they become world-class athletes. Now, that doesn't say that we don't have the coaching or the fundamentals here to develop great athletes. We do have that. But when you go to the stadium, or in my case, the basketball, the best basketball arena we have in the country, every high school in the United States have a better facility. You see? And so we don't invest in institutions that could bring that recurring benefit to the nation. I was speaking with Ray Munnings Jr. the other day, Raphael Munnings, and they were celebrating 50 years of the beginning of the end song, Funky Nassau.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's been 50 years, Mr. Speaker?
50 years.
I owe.
But the interesting thing is Funky Nassau is still making the rounds every time, the best hits.
Still a beautiful song.
Right, and gold records of the 70s are produced. Funky Nassau is a part of it, and the Bahamas benefits. And while the Munnings may not be benefiting like they should, because they have an issue with receiving their royalties, the Bahamas government, for example, should have some fund in place to make certain that athletes such as Elisha Obed, the only Bahamian to ever win a world boxing title, should not have died a pauper. The country should have had a mechanism in place to make sure that an athlete like Obed could live at a particular standard and enjoy what he has contributed to the country for the rest of his life. Likewise, with the beginning of the end, those persons now in their 70s, the government should have had some mechanism in place. If you look at the industrial world, they have mechanism in place, like for the great golfers, great basketball players, and so on. So you'll see they have events, and the proceeds of those non-governmental institution events would go to the benefit of those persons. So, but we don't have that in the Bahamas. So even our athletes have to go around hustling.
They're part of that. Before you start speaking, I need to bring in my guest before the hour comes.
Say this to that point before you leave. Mr. Speaker, you made a valuable point. Notwithstanding the fact that we were number one in terms of two gold medals, number one country, two gold medals. But when you look around the investment, Mr. Speaker, Chinese, Taipei, gold medal for them, each gold medal is worth $720,000. For Singapore, each gold medal for the athlete was worth $1 million.
Wow.
So when you want to talk about the investment, these are the governments. I'm not talking about in the United States where, you know, you come back gold, you get on VD's box and you get all the endorsements.
Right.
But this is what the governments do. And so, as you stated, you know, the high schools in the United States got better courts than our nationals.
Alan, give me a drum roll, please. Folks, we've got another special treat for you in studio. So when I saw Mr. Speaker was putting together this working meeting, open parliament, I used to be in the UK, so I used to be in Hyde Park listening to the speeches and trying to get on the podium myself. You know, it's interesting, a fella like me trying to get on the podium in the UK. But I mean, that's what it is. That's the kind of tradition we need where that's how we're going to strengthen our democracy.
Yes. The whole process that I undertook as speaker, along with the deputy speaker, we started touring all the schools because we believed that we should build a proper civic curriculum so that the kids could get an awareness of how the government functions, the role of the speaker, how bills are passed and so on, the separation of powers and the role of each separate body of the government. So we started that process. Now we are at the stage now where in the Caribbean region and Pan-Americas are looking at getting greater participation by the constituents in the interim period between general elections.
So
this open parliament is a concept designed to get greater participation by the citizenry, to educate the citizenry so that we make better decisions in our choices instead of just voting for a color. We begin to look at the character of the person who's offering, the vision, what we talked about earlier, whether they have a vision, whether they have a plan, what have they done with their own lives
before
offering for public office.
Right. Yeah, we could trust our whole country, the people who are submitting. Anyway, folks, we've got in studio, we've got the chairman of the Progressive Young Liberals, and she is a female, Danielle Evans. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, it's interesting when I saw this thing that the speaker was putting on, I thought it would be good to have leaders of these various organizations, the torchbearers, the young liberals, and whoever else wants to come, because you've got to share ideas, and even though you may be chairman of the youth arm of the party, your role is an important role.
Yeah, it is. I think what we have all as a country come to realize is how important the youth voice is. And I think not only is the PLP understanding that, but just like I said, as a country, we've come to understand how important it is to have youth involved and to find out exactly what we're doing and what the future is going to look like, future politics and a large future of the country.
Yeah, and it's interesting that what I noticed in the Bahamas too is our young people, they're waiting for old people to tell them what to do, and they're not really like stepping up and taking their spot in the society. They're waiting for like my generation. You know, I'm really ashamed of my generation because my generation, they were trained by the older generation who really, you know, I'm totally not impressed by them.
Right.
And I'm hoping that your generation start to look at things like opportunity, open access, and ownership. And you insist that, look, man, we want spaces reserved for young people, right? Like my daughter's in Atlanta. And I don't know of a lot of smart parents who really try and encourage their children to come back here, right? When you look at a place like Atlanta and just compare it to the Bahamas, we're just not modern enough. Our thinking, man, and I'm just amazed that our young people, they're not asking for city government, they're not asking for autonomous zone. I don't understand that why you guys are not like pressing for that.
Well, I think a portion of why that's not happening is just lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have, like the speaker was speaking to, going out and creating a substantial civic curriculum so that people know exactly what their rights are,
right,
and being familiar with the Constitution and stuff like that. I think that's, first of all, that's fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
But even more so, I believe that there is some sort of a paradigm shift happening right now, especially with the onset of elections, that young people are no longer... One time ago, you could come around and you could sell a fridge, a stove.
Right.
Let me fix your roof. Let me put... You know what I mean?
I
always hear about this $50 in a T-shirt.
But look, I never got mine. I know it should be $200.
I never got mine.
Nor have I. But, you know, we hear about those things, and we hear that that's how elections have been won in the past, or rumored to have been won. But I think that there's a paradigm shift happening now where young people are no longer willing to sit down and just accept you just feeding us and sending us off the pasture just after they're able to satisfy you in the moment.
Right.
I think what's happening now, and
we've got to go to the news. Can you save us for another five, 10 minutes? Folks, you listen to The Revolution with Warren McCartney, Lester Alcock sitting in for him. We've got this... We've got the CEO in the building, Leon Williams. We've got the speaker in the house, Mr. D. Halsey Moutrie. And we've got the chairman of the Young Liberals, Danielle Evans. Back in a moment.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Yeah, folks, welcome back to The Revolution with Warren McCartney. This is Lester Alcock sitting in for the great Warren McCartney. Warren, buddy, I don't know how you do it, man. All these texts to read. And I don't know how you do it, buddy. Folks, we're gonna try to get to these texts in a minute. The numbers to call if you want in on this conversation. 323-6232, 325-4316. 325-4259, the text line, 422-4796. Folks, we've got a nice little studio going on inside this room. We've got the speaker. We've got the man who is like, the fella like turning up, you know, you just flip over the whole apple cart. You know, you just like, and he asked the person, you just flip over the whole apple cart. So we've got the speaker. We've got the CEO. CEO is Mr. CEO. Somebody asked me, like, how do I get the CEO in the building? I tell him, man, you know, first of all, I come from with all CEOs. Where are you Fortune 500, Fortune 100? You know, like, hey, CEOs come from with other CEOs.
One call yesterday, one text message yesterday, and I showed up today.
And from, we've got the chairman of the Progressive Young Liberals in the building, Danielle Evans. Danielle, man, first of all, I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm glad you're not intimidated by all this testosterone, right? I'm just like happy because you know, like everyone seated right now, we got our own opinion,
yeah.
And we don't like care, right? We are not overly concerned with what other people think about us.
Right.
Because we have our own agenda. The Speaker have his agenda. I got mine. My agenda is city government. And let me tell you something. If you ain't in the city government, me and you, first of all, you could never be my leader if you ain't in the city government.
You've been preaching that 100 years.
We could do projects together.
Yeah. Every show.
But you could never be my leader because if your vision ain't big as mine, you could never be my leader.
Every show. You didn't tell her she has to fight for the mic. she's lucky that, you know, when Dr. Monroe here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the host, Lester, got trouble trying to get on the mic. Then me and Dr. Miles used to be here.
Right. Well, you know, for other things, and if you got something to say, you're going to say it in the mic, even if the speaker talks.
Okay.
but one of the reasons why I invited you, when I heard you talk about what the young people wanted, you said that the young people wanted opportunity. You said that they wanted access, and you said that they wanted ownership,
right.
but what caught me though is you talk about young people wanting their own spaces as well, and for me, a space for young people would be like a young spot where, like to come into this space, you got to be into like electric cars, you got to be into your little like golf car, you got to have a cell phone, and you got to be into bitcoins and modern things, technology. That's what really struck me and why I invited you, because the project that the speaker is talking about is where we should hear some of these kind of ideas, Mr. Speaker.
Well, you know, what is interesting is when I announced the Open Parliament,
mm-hmm.
there was overwhelming interest from young groups.
Right.
Many, many young groups have contacted me with respect to participating in the Open Parliament. They have taken a colorblind approach. Many of the young persons, you know, when you examine the voters' register, more than 60% of the voters are between the ages of 18 and 40.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
More than 60%.
So those would be the swing voters.
So they believe, and there's some initiatives now among the young people, that they are having initiatives to get young people registered. And they have initiatives to select candidates to endorse as opposed to just voting FNM, PLP, or DNA.
Right, because what these parties have been doing, they've been swinging young people, putting them up there, talking about we believe in you, and then when they win, they just do whatever they want to do.
Exactly. That's how a lot of the young people feel. I know the major parties have been trying to establish these youth arms and so on, but at the end of the day, the women also feel
mm-hmm.
that the type of representation in terms of the ratification of candidates by the two major parties are very displeased.
Problematic,
with
yeah.
that, because they were pushing to try and get 30% of the list of candidates females.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of females offered themselves,
right.
but they were not accepted by the two major parties.
Right.
And so there's another initiative by women who believe that they are not being served.
So we can hear some new voices. We can hear some voices like Danielle at this.
I think one of the things that we need to pay attention to as young people is not to allow ourselves to be used.
Right.
You know what I mean? One of the things that I like to agitate for, and I like to, when I speak to young people or any group about what young people want or what we expect, after I tell you that we want ownership, access, an opportunity, what I like to tell young people is to not to let those opportunities pass, because you will have times when they will appoint you to boards.
Right.
They will put you in certain spaces, but they just want you to be like the token young person.
Right.
So I encourage them to use their voice. When you're in these spaces, don't sit down and allow yourself to be the token young person. Say how you feel, say what you need, say what you want, speak for yourself, younger people, and agitate for what it is that you want to see happen. Don't allow yourself to be used in that type of way. So I think it's, while you could say, you know, parties don't really pay attention, I think a lot of the responsibility falls on us, like you say, to stand up and take it. Right. You know what I mean? If you want it, you get up and you take it.
That's right. That's how power is. Folks, if you want in on this conversation, so we've been talking with the Speaker of the House, we've been talking with Danielle, we've been talking with Leon about a number of things, COVID, the economy. So the numbers to call if you want in on this conversation, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, the text line, 422-4796. All right, April, shall we take a call or two? April, shall we take a call or two? Go ahead, we're going to take a couple calls. I'm not hearing anything. Nope, no one's there. Hold on.
Hello, hello.
Hey, hello, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I'd like to ask the young lady on that panel. First of all, great panel, great show.
Thank you.
Okay, you're almost as strong as McCartney.
No way. Hey, fella got a show called The Revolution.
I hear you. But I'd like to ask the young lady that, do you know all of the candidates, or most of the candidates that have been issued?
Say, what is,
yeah, he's asking you if you know all or most of the candidates for the PLP.
Yes, by name.
And that's the yes, yes for both questions, right? Okay, what I really want to ask you is that inside the inner city at the moment, we're replacing the mock Philip Davis cabinet, okay? There is a candidate that is not there that we would like to be attorney general. Just like how we've got Carl Bessel, who nobody votes for, and he is attorney general. He is now a senator.
All right, thank you, Carla. All right.
Okay, I'd just like to...
Oh, sorry, we lost you. Daniel, you want to answer that?
I didn't hear him at all. What did he say?
Yeah, he was talking about candidates. So obviously, okay. You know most candidates.
Then. Yeah.
And then he was talking about unelected officials being appointed to the cabinet. Do you have any issues with things like that?
No, but I suppose, I don't want to call on Daniel, but, you know.
So speak into the mic, Daniel.
The prime minister is, or the government is allowed three from that.
As per the Constitution.
Right.
As per the Constitution. So.
Right. But, I mean, do you, as a young person, you obviously don't have no issues with that?
No. I feel, personally, if it's within law, mm-hmm. if it's constitutional, then I don't see a big, I don't have any huge objections.
Mr. Speaker, do you have any issues with that?
No, the Constitution permits for three ministers to come to be appointed out of the Senate. But I think that caller was trying to suggest that they have someone in mind,
yes.
that they would like to recommend.
Yes.
I didn't get that. My bad.
So you on board.
I picked up on that.
So caller, you could WhatsApp me back. I didn't get that.
Yeah.
Let's take another call.
The speaker's right on that.
Caller, go ahead. You're unconnected. Caller, go ahead. You're in the revolution.
Caller, they did this talking away with your brothers and the sister. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, unless I have a question for the young lady. Miss leader for what? Young liberal?
Progressive young liberals, yes.
Okay. Miss, I haven't gotten your name, so forgive me.
Danielle Evans.
Danielle, okay. Miss Evans.
Hi.
What I want to ask, Bremen Darling Ferguson here. What's the alley?
Yes, sir, how are you?
I'm holding, thank God. What I want to ask you, what plan... you all, as the young liberals, have for the Bahamas, taking the Bahamian people forward.
The plan.
What's your objective?
The young liberals have decided to use that platform and the air of the leadership in the party to be able to speak and be a voice for the young people in the country. We engage with young people on many different platforms and on many different levels from all walks of life.
But I'm speaking of taking the Bahamas, the Bahamian people forward.
No, I understand that, but specifically we specifically, the young liberals, deal with young people. And so in order for us to go forward, we need to know where the young people would want us to take them, what they expect us to do, where do they expect to go, what vision do they have. And so we engage young people in spaces and in conversation to find out exactly what type of vision they have for the Bahamas, where they would like to see it to go. And then we present those to the leadership and we let them know that when we talking about young people and engaging young people, these are the things that young people are looking for. These are the things that young people want to see and want to see happen.
Right.
Well, anyhow, teach them, okay?
Thank you, Bremen. Let's take another call.
Thank you.
Caller, go ahead. You're on the revolution.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead, caller.
A pleasant good afternoon. Sparky here.
Hey, Sparky.
Hello, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Mr. Hollison Lutri.
Yes, my schoolmate.
Holly Butch.
Hey, Holly. He used to carry on bad. Look how he's carrying on when he was in school, would you?
I think he's evolved in his lot of years.
Holly Butch, class of 1970.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Sparky.
And then you can't wait for me to come to you. You know you had to come to the chief last. That's my last chief. Chief, I know Leslie didn't give me much time, but it's so nice to hear you and Holly Butch together. So much things, so much questions to say, and I can't get it in 3 minutes. But, Chief, I have a problem with our old place of employment. Chief, I don't know what happened to it, but I must say it gone really down in the dumps. As you know, I'm a retiree. I tried to call to get in charge with personnel because I'm still on pension. But they told me that our big building, our big skyscraper on JFK is empty now. Nobody is there other than the security guard. One whole building just sitting there. I asked for the personnel department. I called 302-7000. I ended up talking to somebody down in Jamaica. I asked the person in Jamaica for the personnel department of BTC in New Providence. Mr. Leon Williams, from last Thursday,
uh-huh.
I haven't gotten to the personnel department yet. Somebody told me they moved to the mall in Marathon. Somebody told me the personnel department moved to Papal Track. I tried to get some business straight in the bank with my finances. I can't even get to speak to the personnel department.
All right, Sparky, thank you very much, man. I think they went in BTC on the cell phone now. All right, let's take another call. Caller, go ahead. Leon, you can answer that after this call. Okay. Caller, go ahead. You're connected. Yeah, sorry.
Good morning.
Go ahead. You're on the revolution.
Good morning, my brother, Lester.
Hey.
Good morning, Danielle. Good morning, CEOs, and good morning, Mr. Speaker.
Good morning.
I called to speak to you, sir. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can hear you clearly.
Okay. I must say, well, I don't know if you know the voice, but I'm Antoine.
Yes.
I'm certainly, beyond a shadow of doubt, a supporter of the Honorable Philip Rave Davis and the PLP.
Okay.
Now, I didn't like how you started out conducting the affairs in Parliament, but I appreciate, since you have taken the independent position, some of the initiatives that you are trying to move, especially this latest move, seeking to have a People's Parliament, right? I want to know, seeing as though I'm seeing where the Prime Minister is seeking to undermine your initiative by moving to meet in Parliament, which I do not suspect that anything productive will come out of Parliament. I'm looking forward to you still moving forward with your platform to help the People's Parliament. And I want to know, how are you going to translate whatever comes out of the People's Parliament into motions in Parliament that will help to move our country forward in the right direction? Because we are going completely off the cliff at this point. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you, Lester.
Well, the whole purpose of the open Parliament is to create interaction between the citizens and Parliament itself. And the purpose of that really is to promote openness in government.
If you'd like to make a...
transparency and accountability, access to information, public participation, ethics, and probity. You know, integrity is the foundation upon which we should build. When people lose respect
and
for
trust.
You and trust... And have difficulty believing a word you say, then you have undermined the very process of governance.
Yeah,
and so while the national parliament is meeting tomorrow on Wednesday, perhaps even Thursday, if the debate goes that long. I don't see that as undermining my initiative for open parliament, because I intend to conduct the open parliament. But we have to understand that if the national parliament of the country with the duly elected representatives have an urgency, that would supersede any other activity. But we have gotten overwhelming interest from across the country.
It's certainly something new and different. Let's take another call. Caller, go ahead. You're on the revolution.
Hi, Lester.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Lightburn here.
Hey, Doc.
How are you doing?
Hey, pretty good.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Bahamas. Good afternoon to your guests.
Good afternoon.
I was actually just calling to just add of my thought to what's happening with respect to the COVID situation on the ground in the Bahamas.
Right.
And just, you know, I think it's so important for us to obviously continue the conversation with as many voices as possible, voices of people who are engaged every day. Our healthcare system is entirely on its knees, public and private. We are, in as worse as we can possibly be. This is the worst case scenario that is being lived out right now, where our hospitals are entirely, completely inundated. We literally have no capacity to treat anyone else. We're on our knees in every way. And I wanted to speak to that from the perspective that, you know, I think that we need to change our messaging with respect to how do we solve that problem. We're pointing fingers at people who are not vaccinated as the cause for this situation being as it is. And the reality is that except you have vaccines sitting down on shelves not being utilized, then that can't be the reason why we're in this mess. In other words, we can't say that the Haymans who are not vaccinated are the reason for the pandemic being as bad as it is, if and only if you have vaccines sitting down not being utilized. I see lines wrapped around the corner at the vaccination centers. The Haymans are stepping up and doing their part. The question is, what else is being done? What's happening with respect to the treatment of patients who are positive? In most cases, they are sent home, particularly those with mild symptoms, take Tylenol and rest and drink fluids, etc. And what is tragic about that is that there are proven anecdotal, albeit anecdotal, but very strong evidence showing the value and effectiveness of therapeutics like ivermectin, colchicine, even hydroxychloroquine when used early enough, which doctors like myself and others are utilizing on a daily basis with an almost 100% success rate as it relates to the outcome of hospitalization and death, meaning the patients that are treated with these medications early enough are not going to hospital. They're not dying. And that is what we need. We can't vaccinate our way out of this immediate problem because we don't have enough vaccinations to do so. Okay. So why aren't we treating? And I'm encouraging doctors, I'm encouraging patients to speak with their doctors about treatment approaches that are working. And my simple thought is, what do we have to lose? If the patient deteriorates and needs hospitalization and ventilation, we have nowhere to put them. So why not try every modality that is safe and effective, especially when other countries are showing that they're working and they're keeping people out of hospital?
So, Doc,
especially when doctors here are doing it and are keeping people out of hospital.
So, Doc, you recommend everything should be on the table?
Absolutely everything should be on the table. What do we have to lose? We have a situation, we have a healthcare system that is completely, completely on its knees. It cannot do anything else, public or private, because patients are presenting to them on a daily basis who need hospitalization. If you need a ventilator right now in the Bahamas, you're going to die.
Wow.
All right? This is the situation that we're in, and we have to prevent that. So vaccines are good in its ability to prevent hospitalization and death. It has significantly reduced those rates. There's no doubt about that.
Good.
It doesn't produce infectiousness, contagious. It doesn't prevent you from passing it on, but it prevents patients who get COVID-19 from needing hospitalizations and death. But the reality is, even if every single Bahamian wanted to be vaccinated today, there's no vaccines, there's not enough vaccines available.
I got you,
so
Doc.
So pointing fingers is not the answer.
Right, and
calling... You have to figure out a way to treat until we can figure out a way to vaccinate.
All right, and calling people stupid is not the answer either.
Absolutely.
Dr. Lightburn, thanks a million, man. Totally appreciate you. When you get a chance, tell Diane Phillips I said hello as well.
Will do.
Folks, you're listening to The Revolution with Juan McCartney, Lester R. Cox sitting in for him. We've got Danielle taking over the show, man. We've got the CEOs, Leon Williams. We've got the independent speaker, the Hudson Mutri. Folks, when we come back, Leon Williams is going to try to read all those texts for you. And then we're gonna talk for a couple of minutes with the Kissinger of the Bahamas, the man who's been so right about this pandemic for so long. He must be the most frustrated person in the world, Dr. Gilbert Morris. Back in a moment.
It is never easy to witness nature's wrath. One single named path of destruction over the course of a few hours, sometimes minutes, sometimes seconds, can change your life forever. When a hurricane strikes, be prepared. Let the insurance professionals at J.S. Johnson protect you, your property, and the ones you love. Be prepared. Visit the insurance experts at jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Folks, welcome back to The Revolution with the great Juan McCartney. I'm Lester R. Cox sitting in for him. You know, I'm always impressed, Mr. CEO, with Juan McCartney's his ability to, first of all, to read all those texts, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
When I did my show Connected,
yeah.
I don't worry about texts.
No. You didn't.
But I know Juan McCartney's fans, they rough.
Your co-host read some of the texts
right. So let's see if we can get to some of these texts before we bring in the
okay.
Kissinger.
Awesome show. Please comment on the dire state of BTC. One, employees 5 years later paid minimum wage, still temporary. Two, no program for next year. Summer students program nicked. The state of properties is truly sad sight to behold. Awesome point by the doctor.
By Dr. Lightburn?
Awesome point by the doctor, yeah. I've been stop blaming those who vaccinated because we don't have enough vaccines and haven't thrown away any doses. Everyone needs to be careful and take precaution. Speeches saying vaccinated people are out of the pandemic are very dangerous and not helpful. I am absolutely shocked that Antoine did not run for once.
What was that?
Antoine, I'm absolutely shocked that Antoine didn't run out for once.
Oh, he was brief?
Yeah, he was brief.
Actually, I was very impressed.
You're very impressed. We are all being used. It's a matter of what for and how, and being conscious of how
we are being used. The devil is in there, and using many. Sorry.
Daniel, you heard that?
Yeah.
Why don't PLP support Fred Mitchell and Glennis Hannah Martin for leadership of the party? Wouldn't they be a better choice than the current ones? Haven't they proved themselves worthy? Mr. Lester Cox, it is so very nice to have you on radio. You have been a breath of fresh air. Lester, how did you get these big guns on today? Lester asked the speaker, the reconvening parliament tomorrow, why he did not sign the letter and was protocol followed. And if it wasn't, what would he do?
Well, the speaker left already, but I think the speaker did say that Parliament cannot really reconvene without his involvement.
No, it's like Nancy Pelosi told President Donald Trump, "This is my house.
Right,
you are here by invitation."
Correct. So the speaker also indicated, and I hope I'm not quoting him incorrectly, that he could have said no, and the government would have to wait until September 22nd, I believe.
Right. Just about two more. Great show as usual. Everyone could solve a problem until they're in the position to solve the problem. PM Minutes ain't solving the COVID pandemic, but I don't think Brave could or will do any better than handling the pandemic. Why don't you highlight how the PLPs failed to work with the government in combating this COVID? Instead, they rather play political football, hoping to make the government look bad. Good day. What about the eye? It's exposed.
The what?
The eye. What about the eye? If it is exposed.
I mean the eye. What is that?
I don't know. To so-called COVID. Foolishness. Mm-hmm. Government trick in swinging the Bahamian people. I watched the news this past Friday, the last one, and the survey showed that the vaccine hesitancy is like to politics. We have to stop using COVID to achieve cheap political brownie points.
Now that's interesting. Now, so obviously a lot of hesitation in America in the South with Republicans and but I don't know if that's the case in the Bahamas.
I don't see the comparison between like for example DeSantis as the governor of Florida.
Right. That's purely a Republican thing, and they into freedom and.
Right.
I don't think. I mean, Daniel, I don't know if you are like a political type, right? Have you seen any correlation between like how they have the Democrats and the Republicans in terms of vaccinated and unvaccinated? Are we getting any of that in the Bahamas?
I don't know that we're getting it in terms of Democrats and Republicans. Mm-hmm. I just feel that there's not. I feel that when you can't trust your government,
right,
you are going to have a lot of questions about anything that they put forward.
I got you.
So I don't know if it's necessarily the same. The same disparity is there, but I think the issue is here that we don't have enough information mm-hmm. on the vaccine itself. And when we push vaccine, and then the thought that, oh, we can still spread, you could still become infected. I think that is also something that has a lot of people on the edge about it.
Interesting.
Yeah. We are losing teachable moments.
Always.
But I also have an educational program.
That's the way to do it, Daniel. Do not wait for these fellas to stop talking. The minute they take a breath, you
No, but it would be a misstep, a gross misstep for me to allow the taxer to say that the PLP has not been supportive during the COVID pandemic and that they've just been working against when you know, Brave and his team definitely would have made some effort to reach out to the government to assist and were actually denied very early on. And so I just feel like that's just something that I just needed to point out that just couldn't let that sit there. And just
so you shouldn't politicize COVID.
This is a national thing. It definitely is.
And you've got to get everybody, not just politicians. I mean, we need to get people in the Bahamas who understand logistics, because this is not just a medical problem. This is about logistics and the whole society.
It is. And I believe even the frustration, you know, because a lot of what we're experiencing now, they say, you know, young people this and young people that. And I think a lot of the frustration from young people is very early on in the pandemic when we first started lockdowns and mm-hmm. curfews or whatnot. The main idea was that we did not have the facilities to house sick people in our hospitals. We didn't have the facility or the capacity to deal with it. And here we are, 18 months later, nothing has changed in terms of our ability or the capacity to house. And so there has been no planning. There has been no recourse in terms of we've been in this position before. We opened up the country. We ended up in a dire state. 1 year later, we're almost in the mirrored situation is happening. And there still is zero improvement to our healthcare facilities, the plan, the execution. It's amazing to me that we are still here.
Right. Only one word for this COVID in the Bahamas is just a disaster.
It is.
All right. So I think we have Kissinger on the phone. April, we have Kissinger on the phone.
Debatement Kissinger.
We don't have Gilbert Morris on the phone. Is Gilbert Morris on the line? All right. Well, let's take some more calls then. Caller, go ahead. You're on the Revolution.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Cox. How you doing?
Hey, pretty good.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment and reference to the COVID and the utilization of talk show hosts like yourself.
Right.
Because a couple of months ago, I phoned in and I suggested, I think, to Juan McCartney, why is it that the Ministry of Health isn't having a seminar or utilizing the talk show hosts that have such a broad audience? Because I can tell you, listening to the radio every day, Dwight Strong says something. Aaron Green might come afterwards and her opinion differ.
Right.
Levon comes on and he says something completely different because he never understands what nobody is saying. And then Juan comes on and says something different. I'm understand why is it that the government cannot educate the talk show host so that everybody is on one level.
Interesting.
On one accord. Educate them to what is happening with the COVID, with the vaccine, with everything. So as the talk show host, even on different stations, talk to their broader audience, mm-hmm. everybody's on the same page.
So
the same message.
So, Carl, let me ask you something. What's your sense of listening to talk show hosts? Are they saying that you should get vaccinated or don't get vaccinated? What's your sense of what they are saying?
Some are saying that they're not going to take it. That's their personal choice.
Right.
Some saying they don't know what they could take it for if you can still be able to get it. And like, okay, well, one thing I differed with Levon this morning when he was talking about a situation and he was saying, oh, he can't understand if he could get this in a church, why you can't get it to an outdoor event. I mean, me who listen to a lot of stuff, a lot of talk show hosts, a lot of news on the TV understands that it's more difficult to catch it if you're in an open air than if you're in an enclosed environment. And so I'm saying the talk show host forms the thinking of a lot of their broader audience. And if the Ministry of Health were to utilize, have a seminar for a talk show host, update them on what is happening, get their knowledge all on the same level. And so as they are speaking to their audience at whatever time they have their show, they can then relay that same message. Things will come across more if everybody is on the same page.
But when somebody
is saying this and someone saying that, you know, it makes it difficult.
But Carla, I think you're saying yourself that all the talk show hosts, they're not on the same page.
That's what I'm saying.
With respect to this.
Yes, and I think they're not on the same page because they don't have the relevant information.
But Carla, you need to give us a little bit more respect than that, though. I mean...
Okay. Well, I respect the talk shows. Let me tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
But based on some of the questioning that would come in and I hear them answer, even with me listening to MSNBC and CNN and every other different place and everything, I would have heard answers that could have been given to the various different questions. I've even heard it from right here on different talk shows, and that particular talk show host might not know what's going on.
I got you. All right. So let me put you on the spot. April on the phone. So let me give you a drum roll. Folks, we've got the Guardian's newest talk show host, Mr. Caller, and he's going to update us on what you should be doing and thinking with respect to whether you get vaccinated or you stay unvaccinated, or wear your mask, or don't wear your mask. Go ahead, caller.
I would say we'll do the relevant investigations. We can see, we're not in some stratosphere all by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We can see exactly what's happening in the U.S. We can hear what the WHO is saying. We can see on a daily basis that vaccinated, yes, you can still catch it, but it will eliminate it being more serious. And you won't perhaps be able to be hospitalized as opposed to the unvaccinated. If they get it, the possibilities of them being hospitalized or getting it even more severe contributed even to death, it's a percentage higher than unvaccinated. I do agree that we don't have sufficient vaccinations, and so maybe perhaps we should ensure that our immune system is up to some particular standard. But I would reference a case in the U.S. where there was a particular talk show host that was an anti-vaxxer, and he caught COVID last week. I don't know what it was, last week or last month.
And now he's a vaxxer.
Yeah, just before he died, he told people, go and take the vaccination. But he actually died from COVID simply because he was against taking it. And by the time he got in the hospital and wanted to take it, it was too late, and he actually died. So I'm just saying, do the investigation. But I still feel if the talk show hosts within this particular country, if the Ministry of Health was to work close with them, give them the relevant information, what they do have. You mightn't be 100% on the same page, but if you're 97% on the same page and your wider audience, keep hearing that this is what's going to happen, you might be able to persuade more.
I got you, caller. Thanks a million for calling, man. Let's take another call.
I just want to say this. When you look at Fox News and you look at...
Hey, don't watch Fox News.
No, I'm just saying, right? All of those people are vaccinated. They might be anti... Even Trump got vaccinated before he.
So they just a bunch of hypocrites.
It's about the money and stuff. Our challenge here in the Bahamas is, and I like what the caller said, but you got doctors and nurses, the health professionals that are anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So how do you get the show people on and the talk show hosts on the same page when you can't get the medical professionals in the Bahamas on the same page?
Exactly, and
that's funny.
They are anti-vax. I mean, I don't want to call out nobody, but there was a letter written in the newspaper from a doctor who got COVID last week.
Yeah, but you know, I am not like for or against it. It really don't matter to me. That's a personal choice.
Yes.
But I'm not calling people who are not vaccinated, I'm not calling them stupid.
No. I'm not doing the same thing. You know, my problem is, how does the Ministry of Health and the Minister of Health go to the pub in a united front when the supporters behind him, you know, can't convince them, when you can't convince the people on the defense force and the police officers on the front line to get vaccinated.
But this is a democracy, man. Let me say some democracies. You've gotta be patient with democracies. People are gonna catch up with the vaccines.
One of the first questions I asked you, do you think the Olympics would have happened in any other Western democracy, whether it's European or the Americas? Yeah. The answer is no. It will happen in Japan.
Japan. Initially, when they got COVID, the Japanese leaders didn't really have to worry about their people because the people really
discipline.
Yeah, correct. It's a different level. Plus, there's the trust factor and the polarization is different.
But they did have people. Some of the companies pulled out and didn't want to support and demonstrators, but the country as a whole.
Right.
And you see the amount of thousands of volunteers that came in. Those people weren't paid to support the Olympics.
Yeah. With democracies, man, you got to be patient.
That's my point.
And the people who are convinced that you're stupid if you're not vaccinated, they should just sit down and be quiet.
That's why leadership has to be at the top. That's why you have to have compelling vision.
Correct. And if you could talk with science, if you're following the science, you've got to do the full science, keep the data to yourself. Because if you keep in the data to yourself, that's not science. That's just like nonsense.
No, it's an opinion.
Correct.
You know, so, I said, God help Governor Cuomo, but I thought he was the president of COVID last year.
Oh, yeah.
At 11:30 every day.
He did
his presentation step by step.
He was doing a fantastic job. If he could have kept his hand off the females.
Right. he is motivational and inspirational. And then at the end of his presentation, he always became very aspirational.
Oh, yeah. Hey, but let's take another call or two. Caller, go ahead. You're on the revolution. Go ahead, caller. You're on the revolution.
I want Kissinger to be on the show, man.
Kissinger.
Kissinger is in Texas, aren't you? You know, there's no curfew in Texas, right?
Thank you, man.
Parakeet,
Sorky, those places are 100% vaccinated.
A small island like New Providence.
Yeah.
New Providence is the revenue generator for this country. This is a small place. We've got multiple areas where we can have these COVID-free zones. We've got Albany. We've got Lifeaki. We've got Old Fort. We've got Paradise Island. We've got a number of places where you can really like turn them into COVID-free zones.
Of course.
We could be managing this crisis a lot differently if we mature and grow up a little bit more.
Yeah. Totally agree with you.
Caller, go ahead. You're on the revolution. Go ahead, caller. Hello. You're on the revolution.
Hello. Is that Lester?
Yes, this is Lester, Mr. Kissinger. Folks, we've got Dr. Gilbert Morris on the line. Doc, how you doing, man?
I'm all right, my brother.
Hey, Doc, where you been, man? All day.
Sounds like you have my brilliant cousin there, Leon Williams.
Doc, where you been? I was waiting for you, man.
And I miss you, man. I miss you.
I miss you.
I hope you guys are doing well and keeping safe.
Yes.
Hey, Doc, I was telling Leon when I thought April told me that you were on the line, but you weren't there. I told him you must be the most frustrated man on this planet.
Well, it's very funny. You know, we are part of various chats, none of which I really contribute to anymore, but you'll remember, Lester, both of you actually, in January of 2020, I made a number of forecasts. In total now, about 14 of them. But the principal forecast that I made was COVID is forever. And the second, I explained what I meant by that by referring to the bubonic plague of 1347 and how China shut down a city in 2020, June, not because of COVID-19, but because of the bubonic plague outbreak 670 years later. I also explained that because of a one-legged economy, the COVID crisis is not merely a public health crisis. It's a structural and systemic economic crisis, and that we had to be clever about how we dealt with that, and it would require a kind of ingenuity and discipline which we've never displayed in our country on any front. But I realized something recently. I see the very people who said, no, in January 2020, no, COVID will be over by June. And then they announced plans, and then those plans collapsed.
Right, and then it was August. Then it was November.
No.
Then it was fall. Then it was the next year.
But the same
people are now the biggest vaccine evangelists and have forgotten their incompetence.
But they
are open pronouncing incompetence.
But Professor,
in those early stages. Now, here's what is happening as well. They have nearly starved the Bahamian population. I mean, there's a food program and some other things. But pandemics do things, I explain, that disrupt and expose the fragility of the underlying superstructure in an economy. I'll give you a simple example. There are people going around saying that the Bahamas led small states in inward investment during the pandemic.
Wrong.
By taking in $500 million. Now, that's largely almost 99% people just buying property, just buying land. But in a pandemic where Bahamians are suffering high unemployment, underemployment, and weak employment, those purchases are pricing Bahamians potentially out of their country because they are not structural or systemic in any way. If you compare that to Dubai or Cayman, which is my favorite example, Cayman also took in $500 million, but that $500 million produced another leg for their economy and health services,
sure did.
Diversified them, deepened their capital investment, and put Caymanians in the position for prosperity. foreigners buying land isn't going to do that for Bahamian citizens. But we have people touting that as if there was any skill or any sort of talent involved in that. And so when you see that, it shows a kind of dissonance. If I may make another point on that score, we have wonderful athletes led by Shaunae who proved again that in spite of our failing commitment to our athletes, that they can sustain themselves. I wrote a post that said it would be interesting if we, in our country, governed our country with the same commitment, diligence, resourcefulness as Shaunae Miller and her colleagues. Whereupon some people responded by saying that the Bahamas nurtured Shaunae and nurtured these other athletes, which we all know is false. In fact, many of the people who are congratulating Shaunae passed through were politicians and administration for the last 20 years that failed to fulfill our promises to the Golden Girls. For 20 years, one little strip of yard that we promised them, we can't seem to get it to them.
Can you imagine how embarrassing that is?
It's absolutely appalling, but it's an example of the hubris that we suffer, and we sit there congratulating something we cannot produce. And then there are poor reasoners, interlopers, and umlauts who suggest somehow that, oh, you're saying you're denigrating the Bahamian people. No, no, we're not. No, we're not. What we are saying, we're not saying that there are no coaches in the Bahamas who are good. No companies that failed to support when Leon was at BTC. They supported sports all the time. What we are saying is at scale, the country fails more athletes than it supports. And more athletes owe their success to getting away from the Bahamas than they do being nurtured and trained in the Bahamas. But here's the point. More and more of our people are in the same position. More and more of our people who attain excellence are attaining that excellence in spite of and not because of the Bahamas.
All right.
But if our politicians and political leaders...
But Doc, yeah. Sorry for interrupting, but, you know, I had a challenge, and I wanted to put this to you. We went ahead and tried to do a recovery program.
Right.
While the patient is sick.
Right.
How do you implement recovery without healing?
Yes. I mean, but you, when you say this to people, they have platitudes and cliches and, oh, man, you know, you have to have faith in us. That's, they always revert to some mysticism, you know.
But if the IMF and the World Bank say we're not going to be out of this post 2024.
Well, we're not going to be out of it by the World Bank's forecast. The World Bank's forecast is in fact shoddy. Yeah, go on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, large countries with resources will be out of that.
Right.
But we lag behind those countries by 2 to 3 years.
Uh-huh.
And the question is whether we will survive that long. And as I said,
let me ask you a question. Do you think that in our 50th anniversary, 2023, is there a possibility that we could be celebrating a failed state?
Well, I'd hope not. The Bahamas is a unique, the Bahamas has a unique, what I call the residual economic success, in the sense that its proximity means a drizzle of tourists from the United States keeps our head above water.
Okay.
But, and then the successive governments that is somehow a success. So as C.L. Johnson says, we have degrees of failure. We say, will only 10 people die, you know, not 20.
Hey, Doc.
We don't have a way of saying.
Doc, our time is up. We've got to take this up next week, Monday. Folks, you were listening to Revolution and Warren McCartney. Lester R. Cox was sitting in for him. We had Danielle Evans in studio. Daniel, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
The CEO, Leon Williams. Thank you for having me,
Lester. Thanks for the call. I responded. Have a fantastic day. Stay safe, Bahamas. Hello to my children in Atlanta.
Folks, you guys have a great day.